Welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I am one of your hosts, Allison with a Y, here with one of my co-hosts, Patrick.
Hello.
And Allison with an I is still gone. However,
she's investigating a wizard's cave full of dragon gold in Italy, right? No. I love this runner, and it's the last week that I'm able to do it because Allison with an I is coming back next week, so I just had to get one more in.
It's supposedly a vampire jeweler in Venice.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the vamp. We'll have to interview her about it when she gets back.
Of course.
But we do have a beloved guest on the show with us today. Welcome back, Rowan from It Slays.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I've returned. How long has it been? It's been since you guys made me watch all those Paranormal Activity
yeah,
movies.
I'm so sorry about that.
It was a good time, though.
I thought after that I just would never return on my own accord, but...
You had to recover from what we put you through.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I can never apologize enough for that. To everyone involved.
Come on now, Rowan. I know you're as much of a slut for a franchise as I am.
I know.
Don't play.
This week was my pick, and I picked The Old Ways, which is a supernatural horror film about a Los Angeles-based journalist named Christina who returns to her rural Mexican hometown to write a story about a mysterious area called La Boca. Christina is found unconscious in La Boca by three locals, her cousin Miranda, a man named Javi, and a bruja, or witch, named Luz, their town's last practitioner of the old ways. They tell her La Boca is a forbidden area and that she was possessed by a demon while she was there. Christina herself witnessed her mother being possessed by a demon when she was a child, but her mom died when a bruja unsuccessfully attempted to exorcise the demon. Christina is chained and locked in a room as she struggles with both her heroin addiction and her skepticism of the shamanistic rituals Luz performs in an attempt to save her. That is a plot.
Oh, yeah. What drew you to this movie? Why did you pick it?
I like to see kind of like folklore, folk practices from other cultures in horror. You know, I think I'm very familiar with Eurocentric folklore, that it's really fun to get to explore other cultures that aren't, you know, just Eurocentric. Because obviously cultures all around the world have such rich cultural practices, folklore, you know, beliefs around magic and demons or their interpretation of demons. And it's really fun to get to see the differences and the similarities between different cultures. So that's ultimately why I picked it.
I had never heard of this one prior to watching it for the show. Had you seen it, Rowan, or heard of it?
So I've never seen it. I do remember like seeing a trailer or something when this was released, just because there wasn't many. This was like beginning of COVID times release, which I think is probably pretty obvious from the amount of cast in this.
Yeah, there's five actors in the whole movie, maybe six, something like that.
Yeah, very limited cast.
But yeah, I enjoyed, you know, kind of what you were saying about the multicultural perspectives. I always enjoy seeing how another culture does horror, you know, what the folklore is, what they find scary, etc. in another country. And like, I was aware of the term bruja before watching this, but I really didn't know much else. And it's not a documentary, you know, it's not like kind of trying to run through a list and tell you like what a bruja is and what they do. It's much more like you're just kind of in this world, and there's not a ton of exposition necessarily about like how this woman does what she does. But I enjoyed the like dive into this culture and lore that I was pretty ignorant of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was gonna say I was interested, obviously, like when I read the synopsis for it, because I was like, I'm kind of hit or miss on like possession things.
Yeah.
Obviously like a subgenre that's just kind of played to death, but I'm like, oh yeah, like this is kind of like interesting because it's, you know, this so culturally different from what we're used to. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you guys felt. I kind of felt though, like I was kind of like, I felt like the whole thing, I kind of like wanted more into the like cultural aspect. I just felt it was like very bare bones. Like it was like basically like other than we're in Mexico, you know, like we have like Mexicans are like people from the States mm-hmm. of Mexican heritage. Like I was like, I kind of feel like this is all that really happens. I'm very curious. Like, I don't know how deeply, of course, me behind the curtain, I was watching this at like 4 a.m. So, you know, I'm like watching it, deep diving on my phone. Mm-hmm. And does it surprise you guys that just like a white guy made this?
It did surprise me a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The director and is it a writer director situation? I forget.
No. So it is written. Okay. By a Mexican writer, okay. But from what I could tell, it's directed and produced by some guy that has something to do with the Muppets.
Oh. Hmm. Unexpected.
That is very interesting.
I mean, I don't think, he's not like, Jim Henson or something.
Right.
But from what I could kind of deep dive, because he's kind of barren from like, I looked at his social media. He hasn't posted on social media since 2023, basically since he was done a press run on this. And he seems to do like commercials for Disney. That kind of is his thing, which kind of makes sense.
Interesting.
Because he's a music video director.
That explains a lot.
Oh, so he actually directed a few episodes of the series Muppets Now, which I've heard is dog shit. And I say that as a pretty dedicated Muppet fan. I take the Muppets pretty seriously.
As you should.
But no, that is odd that it's directed by a white person. But at least the story itself, the narrative, is coming from presumably somebody who understands the culture a little more.
Well, and I was actually reading up because I was like, I wonder, what the history is behind this folklore. It was obviously like Bruja is a thing, but this particular bit of folklore with the demon and everything, that was made up. It was inspired by different cultural folklores, folk legends, mm-hmm. but it wasn't actually a specific thing pulled from. It was.
You mean like the specific name of the demon that they eventually reveal?
And even like the practices that we see are not from a specific practice.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The indigenous tribe or community that's portrayed in the movie, like the Mexican indigenous community, I believe is Nahua, which is a real thing.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Part of it is based in a real community, but these practices were made up and then just inspired by different, I think, Mexican folklore and practices.
So I wasn't learning as much as I thought I was.
No. No, not about reality, at least.
Yeah. That's interesting. But I mean, the concept of a bruja is still very rooted in reality.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, Rowan, kind of to your point where, you said you kind of wanted more on this culture, whatever. Obviously, we just kind of learned that it's partly fictionalized and partly not. But I actually kind of liked the, I guess, lack of information to a certain degree, because I felt like then I was in the same position as Christina, because she didn't really have much understanding of what these people were doing to her. She grew up in this village, saw similar things when she was young, but was, I think, too young of a child to really understand what was going on. And so I liked that a lot of it was disorienting to her and sort of confusing, in the same way that it is for the audience at first. And it worked well for me because I like... this is a very pro-witch movie, We love a pro witch movie. We love a movie where the witch turns out to be good. And I mean, you can kind of guess that that's where it's going from pretty early on. But I like that initially, like, it is kind of a creepy old woman with, like, face paint that kind of, like, throws you off. You understand why Christina is scared of her. She's sort of inherently spooky looking from, I don't know, I guess, depending on your cultural perspective. But I like that as you learn more, it turns out that she is, you know, very much trying to help Christina. So I don't know, the lack of information kind of helped, like, throw me off balance in kind of a good way, I guess.
Yeah, it feels like you are very much along for the ride with Christina.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that a lot.
Yeah. So, Rowan, did you learn anything? You said you were, like, researching. It sounded like you were researching as or after you watched the movie. Did you learn anything interesting that kind of, like, supplemented your understanding of the movie?
Not really. Okay. I just felt like, for me, I think I needed more explanation. Maybe unlike you, where you like that. Let me put it this way. I think I would have liked it better if this had been very different from, like, an Americanized possession movie. But I was like, I found, even though I'm getting these cool different cultural aspects, they still just ended up walking into the same tropes of, like, Christian possession movies. They would just, like, slightly change it so it would fit this witch narrative. But I'm like, you know, we're getting this, you know, like, kind of the back walking, mm-hmm. and we're getting, like, yeah. the entrance, you know, into the mouth. And I was just like, what an opportunity to do, like, stuff that, like, I've literally never seen in this genre. Mm-hmm. And being able to, even if it was something real ridiculous, being able to be like, this is totally different. Like, this is nothing that you're thinking of. Now, at the same time, I understand. Everything I looked at, it seems like they knew this was going to Netflix, and they're like, hey, you know, we gotta get, like, white-ass Rowan watching this at 4 in the morning, so, you know, we gotta have something people recognize to kind of watch it.
You are henceforth known as White Ass Rowan.
White Ass Rowan.
It's like White Boy Rick. White Ass Rowan. I definitely get what you're saying about, you know, like, kind of the crab walk and some of these similar elements between your traditional, like, sort of Judeo-Christian possession movie. But I also thought it deviated in some really interesting ways. Like, I can't think of a possession movie I've seen before where the possessed person is completely convinced that they're not possessed.
Yeah.
Like, for a good portion of this movie, she's just like, these crazy ass fuckers have me locked in this room for no goddamn reason. What is going on here? I am fine. Get me out. You know, mm-hmm. that was cool. And I liked how it was, like, sort of this journey of her developing, like, understanding of her own culture that she had left at kind of a young age and sort of sworn off at an early age. And just, like, completely rejecting any notion of the validity of her being possessed or being exorcised at all. It's just like, no, I was in the jungle and you kidnapped me from the jungle and put me here. And what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
I enjoyed that very much.
Yeah. I also see the, you know, maybe there could have been more opportunities for sort of, like, a new and exciting way to portray possession, demonic possession or whatever. I liked the kind of rules of this exorcism. I liked that there were, like, multi-day steps. It wasn't just a bunch of priests in a room, you know, chanting and mm-hmm. yelling. There was just, like, there was ritual, very specific rituals that they had to do just right over, you know, multiple days to get rid of the demon. And I found that really, really interesting, really thrilling, a kind of a fun take or really a more interesting take on demonic possession rooted in less of a Christian, Judeo-Christian sort of notion of demons. I thought in that sense, it kind of brought something interesting and fresh to the possession genre. Because you don't often see possessions genres from the lens of it's witchcraft that's trying to cleanse the person of the demon.
Well, and frankly, also, I feel like a lot of the time you don't get a possession movie where, like, the protagonist is the possessed person. You mm-hmm. know, so often it's about the exorcist, and the possessed person is, you know, basically a supporting character. It's just like some little kid, you know, whatever, half the time, who you don't understand that much about, and it's more about, like, the exorcist's journey. But, like, Luz, the Bruja, remains kind of a cipher throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know a ton about her. You know as much as Christina does, which is not a lot, really. Like, this is very much Christina's story, and I enjoyed that.
I was going to ask, like, how did you guys feel about, I kind of eye rolled the, you know, the drug addict as the possessed person. And maybe I eye rolled because, like, some of the promo stuff that I kind of looked at after, I was interested in, like, commercials, like, any interviews, anything like that. You know, not special features boy here. So I'm like, what can I find? And, like, I don't know. It's just another thing that I'm like, oh, like, I feel like this is such, like, a played out, the drug addict is possessed. You know, it's been used before. And I just thought almost like these guys just felt this was, like, really, like, hip and fresh. And everything I could see, they really, like, you've never seen this, like, drug addict metaphor before. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I kind of did. And I kind of rolled that into, like, the movie describes itself as, like, this folk horror tale, this folk horror possession tale. And, like, I'm thinking maybe that's where I kind of felt left down. Because I just thought it was a little too shiny. It was a little too mainstream for how I like my folk horror. And especially with, like, such an interesting backdrop of the jungle and, like, you know, being in this, it seems like a very remote, like, just this singular building in the jungle. And I was, like, I was excited at that point, you know, when it started. And I'm like, okay, like, this is going to be kind of cool. And, you know, we got, like, creepy kid walking around. And I'm like, all right, like, maybe we're really going to use the jungle and stuff. And I'm trying to be nice because I get the limitations. Like I said, this was obviously a COVID production. It's, like, very much kind of a one location
bottle episode
affair.
Yeah. I share the side eyeing the use of addiction with the possession, you know, like, which one caused the other, I think, is one of the questions that this movie asks or tries to ask. Not that it's not relevant. I think I understand why people lean on that as a way to, like, justify a possession story. Because I think when you look at the history of, particularly if you're looking at the, like, the history of the Catholic Church and possessions, a lot of time it was just somebody was, like, mentally ill, and that was how they dealt with that, was by saying that they were possessed. And obviously addiction is often the result of people having untreated mental illness, you know. And so I understand, but yeah, it feels, I don't know, I didn't love that choice either.
So I reacted in the same way initially. I was a little like, okay, why do we need this, like, drug addiction subplot? And also, like, and this feeling did not change. How the fuck did she get heroin across the border in the first place? I mean, you know, whatever. There are drug smugglers who do that, but this woman is not a drug smuggler. She's a journalist. So I did have kind of a negative reaction to that initially. I think, though, you know, as we learn more later in the movie, the drug addiction certainly is a symptom of deep mental illness for her. We learn, you know, we can probably dig more into this in the spoiler room, but it made more sense to me in the longer run as we learn more throughout the movie as being a symptom of her larger mental illness and kind of very dark shit that drove her to go on this trip in the first place, which it turns out her motivation was not like just doing a story about La Boca.
Right. And like, and I think it plays into, and I don't think it's spoilery to say this, but that like, in a way, kind of like the possession is also a symptom of capitalism. Like that was very much something that I read, was how like capitalism kind of takes us away from ourselves and from where we come from. Hmm. And we become very sick as a result of it a lot of the time. That was a read that I had on the film, which I think is supported by the very end.
Yeah.
Did you read that too, Rowan?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, workers unite there. Yeah. I get it. Yeah, and I mean, probably more so when you kind of get into like the spoiler room there. I think most of my things with this are definitely towards that like latter half, just because I just feel like in total, like maybe, I don't know, the script or something need another pass through or something, because I do feel like this is one of those movies which, I mean, like, this isn't a long movie. This is, what, like, 128 or something like that? Yeah. Like, but I felt there was, like, so many kind of start-stop points where it was like, okay, like, we're concluding. Oh, no, we're not concluding. Yeah. Oh, we're concluding here. And then I also just felt like once we kind of got the majority of this film, I just felt like the second half on it, it was like, let's just rush through this as quickly as we can and not even wait in it, like, whatsoever. Like, obviously, like, when our protagonist, like, kind of, you know, has their, you know, the rebirth and you know, so to say, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, we don't even really get to, if we're going to continue that story a bit, we don't even get to kind of, like, live in there. It's just like, no, we got to get through these like couple plot points, because we, you know, we want this to be under an hour and a half. Our Netflix viewers only have so much attention, so
they're right about that.
I will say, you know, obviously, I think it sounds like I enjoyed this more than you did, Rowan, but you know, and I mean, it's sort of spoilers, but I think it's not too spoilery to say this character has a change of heart. There is a character arc from her being skeptical of this whole thing, and that did feel a little rushed to me. It felt like her, all of a sudden, her skepticism seemed to dissolve almost out of nowhere, for reasons that didn't seem terribly different to things that she had already seen and experienced. It's like, if this earlier thing, you know, okay, so here's a non-spoiler bit that happens earlier. Like, the Bruja starts, like, she has Christina tied down and is, like, sort of massaging her stomach, and then basically like thrusts her hand into Christina's stomach, like seemingly like cutting right through the skin. Like, it's bloody, and she like pulls teeth, I think, out of Christina's stomach.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very supernatural because obviously, like, she does not have a blade or anything that could actually cut flesh, but she somehow reaches right in her gut.
Once her hand is out.
Right.
Like.
Yeah. And like that all happens, and Christina's still, no, this isn't really, it's like, bitch, this woman just penetrated your flesh with her hands and pulled teeth out of your stomach in front of your very eyes. Like, how did that not convince you? And then later on, you know, certain similar supernatural shit happens, and that seems to be finally is the tipping point. And it's like, wait, how did this convert you? You know?
Yeah.
And I was still on board. Like, it didn't really like negatively color my overall perception of the movie, because I was on board for this character's narrative and the arc overall. It was just like the motivation for that kind of change in her perspective didn't make a terrible amount of sense to me.
That's funny, because that scene, I don't know, maybe it's just because for some reason I've had Man on the Moon, Jim Carrey, on the mind lately.
That's such a good movie.
But so when that scene's happening, I kept being like, oh, because like when she, you know, you can tell that she's kind of like, what's going on? And so at first I was like, oh, is this like, are we going to find out this is like kind of a scam job or something? Because just the way it was shot, I think it was the teeth. It wasn't the second time she goes in, but the first time. I was like, it doesn't really look like her hands in it. So I'm like, oh, is this just some sort of like, it looks like she's pulling something out and like, we're going to get the rug pulled under us that like, maybe this isn't what it seems or something. Mm-hmm. And then, it proceeds and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it was just not shot the best or something. Or I mean, I said before, like this is pretty shiny, which is pretty impressive because I think it was a pretty like low. I couldn't find really the budget or anything, but like I'm assuming this is a pretty low budget feature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because like I saw this is like released under like his company. Like I didn't really see any other than Netflix picking it up. It wasn't like a big release, and I also kind of assumed like later on, kind of when we really get into the, you know, the special effects kind of stuff later on that you could kind of tell, like, you know, we're not dealing with like Disney FX, but I don't know. Disney FX aren't even very good anymore. So,
yeah, definitely. I would say low budget, but yeah, I think they did make the most of it. I mean, it looks pretty solid. It doesn't look low budget.
Yeah, I really liked the cinematography, actually,
yeah,
of this movie a lot. It had a very distinct style that matched the tone, was visually interesting. Yeah, I really enjoyed that, actually.
I thought this, you know, I kept thinking when I was watching this, I was like, you know, 13-year-old Rowan, like, watching this in the theater, this would rip. Like, you know, everyone would be going to see this. People should take that as a compliment to this, just because I usually don't say that about things that Netflix puts out. So,
do you think this would be like a you know, kind of mainstream successful movie if it had gotten that release? It feels a little more like specialty audience to me, I guess, for some reason.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about watching it. Yeah. I think it could have been like halfway there. Like I said, I think kind of for me, I felt probably with a couple more tweaks, like I said, I feel like the audience could have really been like, you know, maybe like in that teen range of, I don't know, man, I've gone to some movies in the last couple of years for teen horror that are terrible, that the theaters are just packed. So,
yeah,
like this, you know, if this came out in the theater, maybe I'd be kinder to it because I'd be like, well, you know, It's not tarot, so that's okay.
Yeah, it's not Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Which I still haven't seen, by the way.
Yeah, I feel like this would be very appealing to maybe like the teen horror fan who feels like they're a little bit more cerebral than their peers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, it would have probably gone off. I mean, I enjoy it as an adult, but as like a teenager, I would have been like, oh my God, this is so cool. This is like very cultural.
Good,
like,
horror for pretentious teens.
Yeah, horror for pretentious teens. Oh, I'm obsessed with this idea.
Yeah, I want to start making like horror movies for pretentious teens. That would be fun.
I love that subcategory.
Yeah,
you got to fight for like all the streamers that have that as like a subgenre you can pick.
And yeah,
Shudder needs to get on.
Honestly,
it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else would fit into that category. Like, well, and actually, I never finished the series, but I feel like maybe The Midnight Club might be good horror for pretentious teens.
I think I watched more of it than you did, and yeah, I would put that there.
I need to go back to that. I don't know why I never finished that. I think it was because I had the perception that Flanagan just produced it, but I think he like wrote and directed at least most of it, right?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, as a fan again, I really need to like get back into that.
Don't feel bad. I also didn't finish.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, maybe it wasn't.
But that's only because I didn't realize it was going to be all the books. Like all the different books. So I read The Midnight Club. Like it's a book I've read. Okay. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. These are like Christopher Pike books I've never read.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that's based on Christopher Pike, right? Because you're a big fan of his, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of a sucker. I have a large Pike R.L. Stine collection of the Fear, like all the Fear Street.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
No brouhaha books, unfortunately.
Need more brouhaha books for pretentious teens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we digress, but how did you guys feel about the performances? I thought this was like fairly top-notch acting, honestly. Yeah,
you know who I really, really liked? Javi.
Yeah.
He was so grounded.
Yes, yeah. Seemed very, very real.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I thought the best description I saw of him, someone said this guy is the Mexican Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's so on point.
And it was good because I read it like while I was watching the movie, and then I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I like, that's a compliment.
Yeah.
I was like, that's fantastic. Yeah, I thought they were all pretty good.
Santa Malo.
I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't thrilled with the cousin. Mm. I thought the cousin was kind of the weakest performance.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
and I know it's hard when, you know, I can only imagine as like an actor doing these kind of films. Like, you don't want to be hammy. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go like so over the top. But I just felt it was kind of flat. Like, I was like, oh, even when she's scared, she just kind of seems. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a pretentious teen. pretentious teen horror movie. But even, like I said, even all my things I complained about it, I thought the cast was like you said, I thought it was really well done for what they were given. Like, I thought Christina was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and especially when you've got to kind of portray all these very complex emotional things and kind of a backstory that you're not really ever going to be explaining much. So you kind of have to portray those kind of things just through your emotions mm-hmm. and the tiny dialogue you're saying.
Yeah.
And the actual, like, you know, the actual main witch in this, I thought was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And plus the makeup was great. Mm-hmm. Like, oh,
it looked so cool. Very otherworldly, very spirit-like. I don't know. I was wondering if part of the lore that they didn't like fully explain is that, like, you know, as when she is in that mode, she's like channeling the spirits, you know, channeling the benevolent spirits, the good spirits that will help push out the negative spirits by like making herself look like a spirit herself. That was kind of how I interpreted that. And at least in my head canon, it was really cool.
Yeah, she was great. I think, you know, kind of along the lines of what you were saying, Rowan, I think, you know, again, there's like four or five main characters in this. I agree that the cousin Miranda was, I still thought she was pretty strong, but the weakest of the our main bunch here.
This is the only thing she's been in.
Oh, interesting. Oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought, you know, particularly the actors who played Christina, Luz, and Javi just sort of carried a lot of history in those performances. You know, kind of like you were saying, Rowan, about how we learn some things about Christina's backstory over time, but obviously we're not really like there for it. But mm-hmm. she carries a lot of that in her performance very well. And I thought the actors who played Javi and Luz did the same thing, where it's like you don't actually know a ton about like these characters, where they come from, their backstories, etc. But you have a sense of, you know, history and relationship between them. And of course, in Luz's case, like, deep knowledge of stuff that we know nothing about. And I thought, yeah, there was like, I don't know, sort of as you said, Allison, they're very grounded in a sense of sort of historical context that isn't like explicitly in the script.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to this little team for pulling all this off in like a fucking house, basically.
Yeah. One thing I was thinking about, which to me feels like a rarity, I wouldn't have hated this film being a little bit longer because there were some things that I wanted to dig into a little bit more and I wanted to understand a little better that I thought were very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I could use more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be upset if that made this film a little bit longer
mm-hmm.
Because it did introduced so many sort of interesting ideas that it could have just like fleshed out a little bit more, expanded the lore on, or expanded it so the audience understands a little bit better.
I agree with that, especially, you know, in light of what Rowan and I were both kind of talking about, where it like certain elements, especially in like that back half or third act, feel a little rushed. Like, mm-hmm. again, this character, Christina, undergoes a lot of personal growth and gigantic change as a person. And again, we're going to dig into exactly what that is in the spoiler room, but that did feel a little rushed for me. I was still there for the arc of it. It was just like, I think I wanted a little more sort of natural progression of those things instead of, yeah, it felt a little rushed into. So yeah, I would be down, and this is weird, I don't say this often, because I love an hour and 28-minute movie, but I could have done with this being an hour and 42 minutes.
Yeah.
14 more minutes.
Worse movies have been longer.
Yes. Right. Oh, yeah. Boy, have they. Is there anything else we want to talk? I feel like we, you know, we're kind of getting to that point where we're like, you know, really sort of talking around what exactly happens to Christina. Is there anything like spoiler free that we still want to talk about before spoiler room?
I just really want to get into things about milk. So
about milk,
the goat's milk.
Oh boy, yeah, the goat's milk is important. And we can clarify this without spoiling anything. Like, one of the very first things they do to Christina is just like force feed her goat's milk from like a giant like 5-gallon like plastic jug. Mm-hmm. So yeah, goat's milk is crucial to the goings on here.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I liked that a lot. Mm-hmm. Don't see that in a lot of possession films.
Have y'all ever had goat's milk? I've had goat cheese, but never milk.
I use goat's milk soap, but I don't think I've ingested goat's milk.
No, yeah, no.
Damn, we're living wrong.
Yeah, so let's review this before we head to spoiler La Boca, I guess, is where we're going to head. Rowan, you're our guest. Would you view it, cue it, or screw it?
You know what? I think I'd put it in cue it. I think you guys brought me around.
Really?
I was like, for sure. I was like, I think I'm going to screw it. But the more I'm like reflecting on it, the more I'm talking about it, and I think there's things there that, you know, people will like. So, you know, I think if you're one of those people we're trying to really target with this episode, those pretentious teens, you should put it in your cue it and check it out. What about you, Patrick?
I'll give this one a view it. I enjoyed it very much. Obviously not perfect from what we've been discussing here, but overall, I felt like it was a pretty unique take on a possession movie. I thought it was very well performed. I was very invested in this character's story and her arc. Loved how it wrapped up in the end. We're going to get into that in a moment. But yeah, it goes fast. As I was saying, maybe could be a little bit longer, I'll say, for once in my life. But yeah, I enjoyed it. This is one of those things where kind of glad that I'm watching every horror movie on Netflix, because I don't think I would have pulled this up otherwise. So I'm glad I had the opportunity to check it out. Allison with a Y, what do you think?
I'm going to give it a really solid cue it. It's not quite a view it for me. There were definitely opportunities that I saw. I think that there were opportunities for it to expand, maybe make a little bit of different choices. But overall, I enjoyed it. I don't necessarily think it's something that everybody is going to love. And I don't think it's like you have to watch this movie, but I think it is absolutely worth your time if you're looking for something new, a little bit of an interesting take on the possession genre, if you want to see sort of horror from a little bit of a different cultural lens. It's worth your time. There are far worse things you could spend your time watching than this movie.
Hear, hear.
All right. So before we go down to spoiler La Boca, I guess.
La spoiler boca.
La spoiler boca.
Yeah. Oh, how do you say spoiler in Spanish?
Ooh, hold on.
Getting fancy.
A spoiler. It's literally spoiler with E in front of it.
That's so funny.
It's a loan word. So yeah, la boca del spoilers. I don't know.
Yep. Before we head there, just a reminder that you can find us on social media on
De los Spoilers. I don't know. My grammar's all fucked up. Sorry to any Spanish speaking listeners.
All right. Well, before we head there, just a reminder that you can find us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube at Amoncast, E-H-M-O-N cast, or TikTok at Amon Podcast.
We'd also love for you to join our Discord community. We have folks from all over the world out there discussing the movies that we watch for the show and the other horror that they're enjoying in their lives. We'd love for you to join us there, and we've got a link to that in the show notes. Also, visit the website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. We've got all our episodes out there, as well as our merch store, where you can get all kinds of goodies with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art on them. And lastly, please leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice. We love to see the feedback, and it helps people find the show.
All right. We're going to go to... How do you say that again, Patrick?
I don't. Don't ask me to mangle that all over again. I'm not doing it again.
Okay.
Scrub back 30 seconds if you want to hear my terrible pronunciation of the spoiler boca.
Anyways, we're going to the spoiler boca. We'll see you there soon. All right, welcome back. We are now in the spoiler La Boca, which I can't say the same way any two times, apparently. And Christina finally starts to become a believer because Luz set a salt barrier around the house, a salt circle around the house, and Christina can't leave. There is a supernatural force field due to the salt circle.
Right. She like chokes Javi out, right? And then tries to escape.
Oh shit, she does.
That was a weird moment. I thought she killed him.
I know, I was really upset.
And it turns out she just, blood choked him. Like he just passes out. But for a minute I was like, fuck, did she just kill him?
Yes.
Well, she like checks his pulse though, doesn't she? That's why I got confused.
Okay.
Cause she checked his pulse and then I'm like, I was like, oh, okay, he's dead. That's what she's like checking.
Yeah.
So I did get confused. Now, you know, after it was done, I was like, oh, maybe she was checking to make sure he wasn't dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was confused. And then when he pops back up, I'm like, oh, I guess, you know, we're fine. You know, mm-hmm. we're just eating at the dinner table now or whatever.
Yeah, he forgives quite quickly.
Yeah.
I don't think I would be so so forgiving of somebody who choked me out like that.
Yeah. But yeah, she like tries to walk out the door and it's like there's like, you know, this shiny sheen of a barrier formed around the house because of the salt line. And then she like pukes up a bunch of like fucking crude oil.
Yeah.
And that's what sells her.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
would probably sell me too.
Getting teeth pulled out of her stomach didn't do it, but seeing the spooky barrier and puking up a bunch of crap convinces her.
I mean, I'd puke that much if I drank all that milk, so.
She does drink a lot of goat milk.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the force field, yeah. I mean, how are you going to argue with a force field?
How do you argue with a force field?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that song from The Sound of Music, right?
How do you argue with a force field?
How do you hold a salt line in your hands? Did not think I'd ever reference The Sound of Music on this podcast, but here we are. I guess this is what I'm resorting to after 8 years. But yeah, she finally gets on board and she learns that a death god named Postecki? Yeah.
Which is also a made-up demon.
Right. Is that's what's inside of her. and it lives in La Boca, which is why she wasn't supposed to fucking go there. But it turns out she knew she wasn't supposed to go there. And she intentionally went there because it was a very isolated place. She had been dealing with depression for a long time and went there to intentionally OD on heroin because she was ready to end it all.
Yeah, she wanted to go somewhere where, you know, nobody would really find her.
Yep, she was not there to do any story.
No.
And I mean, this was where I, you know, we were talking about the drug use subplot, I guess. And yeah, I was not crazy about the drug bit at first, but I liked it when it turned out to be kind of a broader symptom of her mental illness, and also like essentially the way that she was intending to commit suicide. Like, that made a lot of sense to me. She's dealing with some heavy shit.
I don't know how I felt about that reveal about her real intentions of going down there. I guess in that sense, it was really effective because I was like, oh, like that. And obviously she's dealing. I mean, I guess it was an appropriately dark motivator for her to go down there for what ends up being a lot of dark shit that she has to deal with. So I guess it made sense.
Yeah.
That part, I definitely, I kind of felt the same as you guys, even though I didn't like the you know, like we said before, the kind of drug metaphor in the possession. Like, I thought, okay, this, you know, this kind of makes sense for the story. And I do also felt it was kind of dark because I was like, this is almost darker than the rest of the movie, like, really. Like, even, you know, some of this possession stuff, like, you know, as lighthearted as a possession is, you know, I was like, yeah, this is, like, some, like, real, real shit.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, okay, this adds a little weight to it. Now, you know, I don't know if they pay off the weight. I don't know how many montages you're supposed to put in a movie, but I was like, you know, we got some levity, I guess, especially when, you know, Christina kind of comes around, becomes a witch herself. We kind of get like the music. We get like a Rocky, like, I'm getting ready for the fight going on.
Yeah.
The Wonder Woman theme.
Yeah. So, I mean, so after we, you know, she basically reveals her real reasoning for being down there, that's when like the major ritual happens to complete her exorcism, what's effectively her exorcism. And it's really intense. I mean, we see, this is when we see Postecki, right?
Did we see him?
Yes, we did.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I guess.
Very, very briefly.
Yeah.
Catches a flame.
Oh.
But.
Yeah.
I thought it looked pretty good. I mean, until we caught on fire, because obviously, you know, like I said, the CGI budget, it was probably not amazing for this, so you got to do what you got to do. But I'm assuming the original kind of shots of them are practical. Like, it looked like it was just kind of someone in an outfit and some makeup, some sharp teeth, stuff like that. Like, I thought, I was like, oh, this looks pretty scary.
Yeah.
Scarier than, you know, most of the times. I'm well known on my podcast. I'm a notorious hater of, like, you know, The Conjuring and all, like, Insidious, all those things. And I'm like, this is better than anything I've seen in any of those. So
I loved the design of Postecki. It looked almost alien in a lot of ways. Yeah. Just very, very otherworldly, humanoid enough.
Mm.
Where it's like you can look at this as if it is a being that has sentience, but like really, really, yeah, just having this otherworldly quality to it. It really, when we finally got to see Postecki, I was like, oh, I love this design. I almost want to like find pictures so I can look at it again. I thought it was so cool.
I have no memory of it. But yeah, this comes about because like Christina has again gotten over her skepticism, and basically I think she not only like agrees to participate in this ritual, but I think actually like proposes to Luz, like conducting this ritual called, what is it, like the Broken Man or something like that, because she's seen this ritual in one of Luz's like books of her, you know, spell books essentially.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, agree to do this, and they, you know, it's, the stakes are built up, you know, Luz is like, this is very dangerous, you know, are you sure, whatever. And yeah, so this is how we end up conducting this ritual and getting Postecki out, but also killing Luz in the process.
Yeah, Luz knows it. Like, she knows it, though.
Yeah.
She knows she's sacrificing herself. I mean, there's this great moment where Luz looks at Javi just to basically, you know, with this understanding that this is it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to have to take care of things around here now. And it was a really beautiful moment. I love that they took that moment, they let a little bit of breath in there.
Yeah.
For her to say goodbye without saying goodbye to her son.
Yeah. Yeah, so Christina is saved, exorcised, but at great cost. Because she loses an eye somehow in the process, right? Mm-hmm. I forget how that happens exactly.
I feel like they didn't really show it. I think she just kind of came out and...
Okay. So that wasn't was that like wasn't just me. Okay, I was like, maybe I missed
injury
something.
To the eye.
Yeah, yeah. She loses an eye. Luz dies, and Postecki gets out of Christina and then goes right into Miranda.
Yeah, you said earlier that the director was a director of music videos mostly. I was like, okay, I can see it after that part because it gets very like a little amped up, a little rock and roll with the, all right, now we're going to exercise Miranda. And it's like a little bit of kind of like that rock and roll montage vibe to it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, the filmmakers were clearly enjoying like Christina picking up the mantle of the Bruja, because that's what she does. She like goes through Luz's spell books and starts doing Bruja shit, painting her face. And, you know, she's got this like cloth tied over her eye that's been, you know, injured. And, you know, she just looks like a fucking badass, you know, one-eyed Bruja. And the filmmakers clearly were like, yeah, this is awesome. Let's play this up. And it is pretty awesome. You know?
It's fun. It's because I was expecting the movie to be over. You know,
yeah.
I wasn't really like paying attention to the time. So I was like, oh, we're wrapping up. And then I was like, oh, there's a whole other act. But they were like, but don't worry, we're not going to like make you sit around for too long to watch this last act.
And this is where, you know, like you were saying before, Rowan, where it really felt a little rushed to me. And I mean, even though I was into it, like I was into Christina's arc and I was into the badassery of her becoming a Bruja, it's like, wow, you picked up these skills fucking fast.
Yeah.
You know, like anybody can become a Bruja. Just like pick up the spell book and do the follow the instructions.
You gotta lose an eye first.
Yeah.
And then,
and pick up the mantle.
But yeah, no, it like I said, it just seemed like almost this part there needed to be another look over of just the pacing and the script. Because like if we're going to do that, let's revel in it a little bit longer.
Right.
And, you know, let's see her be a badass for a little longer or make it seem like a longer process than just kind of like, oh, sweet, like, I just had all this traumatic shit happen to me, but guess what? I'm ready to rock and roll like 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what the timeline felt like.
Yeah.
Well, and especially because there's been build up around, you know, the old ways disappearing and how Luz was the last practitioner and Javi says, you know, I'm not picking this up. That's not my path. You know, it feels like there's kind of a high barrier to entry to become a Bruja and practice these old ways. And, you know, whatever. It's in her, like, blood. Like, this was her community that she came from. But it's still like, wow, you picked this up real fast.
Most people spend a lifetime
learning.
Yeah, that was a little like, okay, I have to, you know, do a little suspension of disbelief to accept that.
Right.
But I'm glad that that was her path. Like, I loved that choice.
Yes.
And that plays into kind of what I picked up with this being also, like, part of the possession is also just the ingrained capitalism into us. You know, she's shedding that to go back to traditional ways of her people.
Mm.
And letting go of the capitalistic grind that she's been on.
I didn't see, like, economic metaphor in this. I mean, sort of like old ways versus contemporary ways, but I didn't see, like, necessarily economic metaphor.
I guess to me, they laid the ground for that earlier on when her boss is talking about how hard she works and how she never sleeps.
Mm.
And, like, she just, like, is known to grind to do her work. And so that kind of little nugget that they placed in earlier in the film is kind of where it planted the seed, at least for me, that might be where they're going with the possession.
I had forgotten that. That makes sense, though.
Yeah, and I think, and then, you know, like, that ties into that ending of, like, you know, his eyes obviously being the towel, and you're like, oh, okay, like, you know, he's possessed, which you would assume, like, okay, he's, like, he wasn't there or anything till then, so, like, he's been a demon, like, you know, and yeah, that's where I took it, was like, okay, like, this boss at her job, and the one that's making her not only grind, but it's wearing her down. And then obviously, yeah, he's the one that's, like, kind of helping, aiding her, like, not being in touch with, like, her heritage and her roots and stuff. So, yeah. Capitalism, just, geez.
So we should add the context on that. So the kind of the kicker to the movie is her boss, Carson, I think his name is, who has shown up a few times throughout the movie, like, in flashback and also, like, trying to figure out where the hell she is, shows up at La Boca too. And, you know, mirroring the opening sequences of this movie, they bring him to the same house, and Christina prepares to start force feeding him goat milk and exercising him because he's the latest victim of Postecki. But wait, Rowan, were you saying, like, you thought he had been possessed before he even came down to look for her?
Well, I mean, I kind of just assumed, I mean, I guess unless you just kind of enter the country and then it's like free game. But I was like, oh, like, you know, he shows up, he's trying to figure out what's going on. And then it's like, oh, wait, like he's got a demon in him too.
Oh, I thought it was
at it. Yeah, well, I kind of looked at it like that, like maybe it's not necessarily the same demon. But now that, you know, now that she's the, like, the demon-hunting badass, it's like, okay.
Oh, it's so interesting how different people read it. Because I was like, this is purely, like, he's possessed by the demon of capitalism.
Yeah, no, I just thought, like, the exact same thing had happened to him that seemingly happens to people if they fuck around at La Boca, which is, like, La Boca just seems to be Postecki's home, and if you fuck around at La Boca, Postecki gonna come for you.
Damn.
And I thought, like, just the exact same thing had happened to him as Christina, other than that, like, he didn't go there to intentionally die the way she did. But yeah, she's kind of got, she's also kind of, like, putting her twist on these traditions too, because, like, she tries to conduct the same broken man ritual on Miranda that successfully exorcised her, Christina, and it doesn't work. Postecki is, like, one step ahead this time. Yeah. And then I forget what she did. Like, she kind of puts her own twist on things to successfully exorcise her cousin, but I forget what that is exactly.
I don't.
Well, and this, that's the issue, right? Is I feel like that whole part of the film. Like, even when I just finished it, I'm like, I don't think I remember anything past the death of Pisacki. Like,
yeah,
I was like, they just didn't make it a point to stick on what kind of her rituals are.
Yeah, well, and I think it's another thing where it was kind of like hand waved. It was a little rushed, you know. It was just like, oh, she's got a new thing that she figured out how to do, and like, whatever. Again, in terms of the emotional impact of this all, it still worked for me. But in terms of, I guess, the logistics or the logical side of it all, it was a little mushy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
You got to wait for the sequel, The New Old Ways.
The New Old Ways. Rowan, last episode when Allison picked this movie, I was like, this sounds like it's going to be one of those like movies that they crank out for boomers where they like team up a bunch of old action stars in the same movie. It feels like, you know, The Expendables or Red or something like that.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious, because all I thought about is when she looks at Carson and like his eye does the thing. I don't, you know, it was late at night, guys. So I, you know, but all I could think about was, you know, the very popular meme of like, you know, something edgy happened, and then it cuts to the Linkin Park music and it's like directed by Michael Bay.
I love that meme.
And I was like, that's how they're going to end this. Get it ready for the sequel.
What I've done.
Yeah, we know what our playout music is for today. I think that's all our spoilers, right?
Yeah. Is there anything else y'all wanted to discuss with this movie?
I don't think so.
I think I got all my kind of talking points.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll watch Christopher Allender's episodes of Muppets Now.
Oh, boy.
Report back on the next horror catch-up.
I got to find out about that. Yeah. I think he shot a commercial for the Solo movie also.
Whoa.
Huh.
Wow.
I didn't recognize any of the music videos. I know he directed a music video for Jordan Sparks.
Wow.
Wow.
The R&B singer. Yeah. That was the only kind of like big name I could recognize. Huh.
That's wild. I haven't heard or thought of that name in a long time.
Same. All right. Well, that's The Old Ways. I know Allison with an I isn't here to tell us what her pick is, but Patrick, did she tell you what we're watching?
Yes, she sent us a dispatch from the haunted cat orphanage that she was looking for in Italy, and sent along her pick because she will be back next episode, finally, from her extended summer sabbatical. And she has told us, and Rowan, you foresaw this, I think, you know, because
I looked deep down inside myself. I got my own little brouhaha magic going.
Did a ritual.
Yeah.
Because you earlier in the show referenced the movie that she picked, which is Tarot.
Mm-hmm.
So let's read the little Netflix synopsis of Tarot here.
All right, so the little Netflix blurb on it says, when a group of friends discovers tarot cards in the basement of their vacation rental, their deadly predictions come to life and terrorize them.
Okay, love it. Have you seen this, Rowan? I've never seen this.
Yeah, so me and Jill over on our podcast, we did a episode when it came out in theaters on this.
Okay. Well, and Allison, with a Y, you're going to lend some perspective to this, because you know some shit about tarot. You've done tarot readings for me before.
Yeah, I can read some tarot cards.
You should read some tarot cards on the episode.
Ooh.
That would be fun.
We could do a little, I don't know, we could do a predictor at the top of the episode about how the episode's going to go.
Yeah. All right. Well, tarot, I'm excited. Well, next episode, we will have our dear friend Allison with an I back with us to discuss tarot. Until then, we want you to go listen to Rowan's podcast. Rowan, tell us a little bit about your podcast. I think we could safely say it's a sister podcast. I think we're sister.
Yeah,
podcasts,
really, right? We just bounce back and forth. We're still going to have you guys on air. It's been a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can hear me over on the It's Lace podcast, you know. Just look anywhere. That's where it is. We're bi-weekly. Actually, today's pretty packed for me. I'm going to finish this. We're going to be talking about Perfect Blue tonight.
Ooh.
And
oh, that's such a good movie.
It's my first time seeing it. So,
Oh, shit.
You know, I'm sure by the time people are listening to this, that'll be out. And we have lots of stuff on the go. We do Now Slayings almost every other week. So that's, you know, we're reviewing stuff that's just released.
Wow.
You know, if you go to our Patreon, I do a show with Jill on there that's a Patreon exclusive show where we will talk about kind of horror television. We focused on Creepshow right now. Mm. We've been recording some episodes. We went back to Masters of Horror and we've been talking about those. And sometimes we talk about really bad Tubi movies too because we can't convince anyone on the main podcast to talk about really bad movies. So yeah, I mean, just look up It Slays podcast. If you guys are following, you know, any of your listeners following you guys, I'm sure, you know, they've bounced over to ours, just like our audience bounces over to yours. Like you said, the sister podcast.
It's a beautiful relationship that we've forged over the past, I don't even know how many years we've known you guys. Like, I feel like we first connected with you around COVID, actually, so it's been quite a while.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I never like to say the dates because I'm always I feel like, oh, I've only been doing this, you know, for a couple years, and I look and I'm like, oh my god, we're on year six. Wow. This year. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, crazy shit. But yeah, It Slays, always a delightful time. Love listening to those guys. So if you don't already listen to It Slays, go check them out. And in the meantime, go and check out our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. Got all the episodes out there and the merch store. Follow us on social media, AmonCast on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, and AmonPodcast on TikTok. I wanted to say Twitter. It's not been Twitter for a long time, nor have we had a fucking Twitter for quite some time now, because fuck that shit. Join the Discord community. We've got a link to that in the show notes, and leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice.
Until next time, this has been Every Horror Movie on Netflix. I'm your host, Allison with a Y.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Rowan.
And this episode was directed by Michael Bay.